Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Talk Epilepsy podcast, brought to you by Epilepsy Scotland. Today we talk to BBC Radio London football commentator Cal Bates about his experiences of living with epilepsy, how he got into a career in football commentary, and the barriers that he's had to overcome throughout his career because of his epilepsy. To begin with, I asked how he got diagnosed with epilepsy and how he felt.
It came totally out of the blue, to be honest with you. It was in 90, I was 23 at the time, so, and I was just around my mother-in-law's. They were just at, it's actually quite funny in a bizarre way. I was around my mother-in-law's. They're having a family photo taken. My wife has younger sisters, teenagers, and they were all being grumpy. Nobody would smile at the camera. And I was the other side of the camera, so I'm behind the cameraman. So I started pulling funny faces. And at some point during those funny faces, I had my first tonic-clonic seizure. So I'd like to know when they thought, I don't reckon he's messing about. That's a face that he can't pull messing. So I then had the seizure. Thankfully, I was sat next to my mother-in-law. My wife was nearby as well. They looked after me, called the ambulance. Ambulance come and took me away, and the being from an epileptic point of view, it was petrifying because I'm just seeing as I am talking to you now, and I'm now in Adam Brooks Hospital in Cambridge. I've got my wife crying, I've got doctors trying to ask me questions, I'm sort of drifting in and out of consciousness, trying to work out what on earth's going on, very unaware of my surroundings. It was incredibly scary. It really, really was. How do you even sort? Yeah, as you can see here, it was just so confusing. How do you work it out? How do you, I don't know, can't think of the exact word, but how do you quantify that? How do you even begin to understand what's just happened?
Do you feel that sort of took you, do you feel like you've sort of processed that over time, or do you feel you're still why that sort of happened? Or
I mean, I've learned a lot about the condition since I've had it. Yeah. Because I think epilepsy is something that people don't talk about. There's a definite stigma about it. I think, you know, for example, if you had a seizure a few hundred years ago, you'd probably be taken to a river and drowned for being possessed. So it's something people don't talk about, and I like to be open, try and, I suppose, allay and dispel old wives' tale, should we say, about the condition. So but that was really helpful for me as part of my own self-therapy, talking to Epilepsy Action, talking to, you know, people like yourselves, finding out more about it, talking about it more. Because when you act, what I found is when I've spoken to people and helped myself process it, there's nothing I can do about it. You know, I've got, I think it's idiopathic epilepsy. I have seizures, but we don't know why. It's almost like I got, you know, we did the toss of the coin, and unfortunately, somebody got heads, I got tails, and therefore I'm epileptic, they're not. So there's nothing I can do about it. Doesn't mean you don't get scared when you're feeling unwell or you've got a lot of stress going on in your life. You can get worried, you know, you can get panicky. As I said, I've had partial seizures before. I've had seizures in my sleep. But interesting thing with myself is that I seem to put myself in safe places when I've had seizures. For bizarrely, subconsciously, I mean, I had a seizure at a train station. Now, the train station, it was my way home, used to always go to platform one. I would stand in literally the same place. You know, they have the little TV screens that says so-and-so arriving, departing, et cetera, et cetera. I would stand watching them, and just then the train would turn up and I'd go home. For no logical reason that day whatsoever, I decided to go and walk 20 yards up the platform to go and sit down. I sat down and within about 5 seconds had a seizure sitting next to someone. I did it on the underground. Saying, it must be something about trains. I really should get a car. On the train again, I got onto the underground. Always stood up because I was only going a few stops. For whatever weird reason, decided to sit down, had a seizure. So my brain must put me in a safe place. So it seems to anyway. I don't seem to have had a seizure, I don't know, halfway up a flight of stairs or when I've been alone or anything like that. So I'm very lucky in that sense. But processing it it's hard. When I've spoken to people before and they say, oh, what's it like to be epileptic? I said, it's almost like being an alcoholic, as in I'll always be epileptic. If I have a seizure tomorrow, if 5 years' time, 10 years' time, I'm still epileptic, same as an alcoholic. Might not have a drink for 10 years, but they're still an alcoholic. And so, yeah, it's a life sentence, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a ball and chain around your neck that you're tied to it forever and it will rule your life, because that isn't always the case.
What sort of challenges do you feel you've sort of faced since your sort of diagnosis of epilepsy?
Travel being one of them. I live in a village near Cambridge. We haven't got, well, we've recently now got a train station, but we didn't have one. A very infrequent bus service that only goes to the sort of nearby villages. So getting around for work, very hard. You know, I've lost jobs in the past because I just haven't been able to get there. You know, I've had a role, I've had a seizure, lost my license for a year. There hasn't been anybody nearby that works there. So I've just had to resign because, yeah, I quite simply couldn't get to work. You've had problems, definitely with, as I say, losing your confidence, I think is one of the things you do lose is, I became, after the first seizure, I was so panicky. You almost felt like a child. You needed a cuddle. You needed to be told everything was going to be okay. And my wife was brilliant in that sense because she was looking after a petrified child. I was having panic attacks. I was struggling to sleep because I was worrying. I was almost working by the, you know, suddenly I become Carol Vorderman in the fact that I could work out to the split second how much sleep I only had left. I could get, I could get, I could get. And then, of course, you get that worry where you're desperately trying to get to sleep, but then you're worried because you haven't had enough sleep, but you really need to. And you just go. So I was, you know, I wasn't getting enough sleep, wasn't getting enough rest, wasn't thinking properly. I was just worrying about worrying about worrying. And so trying to get myself back on the sort of straight and narrow took a long time. And thankfully, my wife was very patient with me initially. And after, you know, I'd had some counseling online, just talking to, I think it was Epilepsy Action. And that really helped just to know and just to find out how common epilepsy is, because people don't talk about it, which I totally get. At the end of the day, when I've had a tonic-clonic seizure, I will collapse to the floor. My eyes will go to the back of my head. You bite down on your cheeks and your tongue. I've lost my bladder once. Brilliant. You know, there's nothing I can do about it. It's just, unfortunately, epilepsy. And naturally, that's not a good starting point to a conversation. And if people see that, they think differently. So, yeah, to get past that embarrassment factor or to get past the stigma. And one of the, I suppose, coping mechanisms or challenges that I've done is that if I'm starting a new role or meeting new people that I'm going to see frequently, I will start off as Carl. And then within a couple of weeks, once they've got to know me, I will then tell them I'm epileptic. Because I think if you start a new role or you meet new people and they already know you have epilepsy, if they don't know about the disability, they're naturally wary of you. They don't mean to, but you can see they're not quite sure how to talk to you or are you okay? And I think people sometimes get the misconception if somebody's epileptic, they're naturally a bit slow or they can't process properly. And that's something that people have almost been, oh, you're okay then. It's like, yes, unless I'm having a seizure, I'm exactly the same as you, which people seem to find very hard to comprehend. Like, well, really? Yeah, really. Honestly, my brain works because that's the problem. I was explaining to people about it's a common, you can be commonly misdiagnosed in the form of epilepsy you have. Because if I had a seizure here now and you weren't having the conversation with me, if I rang the doctor up and said, I think I've had a seizure, they could say, what happened beforehand? Can't remember. What happened during the seizure? Can't remember. What happened when you come round? Couldn't tell you. How long was it for? I don't know. So how do you diagnose that? You've had a seizure? Yep, pretty sure of that. What else? Not a clue. So yeah, it's awkward, but yeah, I try and get people to know me first before bringing it up. I've got no problem bringing it up, but I like people to realize that I am, you know, the same human being either side of a seizure. I'm not epileptic and you've got to keep an eye on me every 10 seconds in case I'm a walking grenade, so to speak.
We always say that sort of epilepsy is sort of more than seizures. There's a lot of people just see the seizures and just think that's it, that's sort of epilepsy. But there's a lot of sort of the impact on like mental health, independence. Do you feel that's been your sort of experience?
Yeah, I would in regards, as I say, the problems that you have with confidence. I think that's a huge thing. And I suppose the embarrassment factor. I'd be lying if I wasn't embarrassed after I had my first seizure, as in having to tell people that you know from just, I don't know, going down the pub playing in the same football team, this, that, and the other. It's you're having to explain the change because epilepsy isn't spoken about enough. You know, if I walked in the pub, for example, with to see my friends, and I said, "Oh, I've been diagnosed with diabetes," they'd probably be, "Oh, that's a shame. Anyway, what do can you still drink? Can you do this? Can you do that? Yeah, okay then." And within 5 minutes, that's the conversation done. They'd feel, but you walk in a pub and see your friends and say you're epileptic, that's a whole different ball game. They're then really going to start, hang on a second, when actually diabetes is a more severe condition than, you know, that has to be managed a lot, or in some cases can be far more serious than epilepsy. So it's because diabetes is spoken about all the time and people presume, oh, you've just got to eat a Mars bar or you just need an injection, you just got to watch your diet, you're perfectly fine. People aren't worried. If you say you've got diabetes, nobody raises an eyebrow. But when you say you suffer from epilepsy, people then really pay attention and in some cases can avoid you due to awkwardness. I remember I was at a wedding. It was a friend of my wife's, so I didn't know many people there. And I was talking to somebody just at the bar. It sounds like I've got a drink problem, doesn't it? It's nothing like I've mentioned the bar a few times. We were drinking Coca-Cola. And as we were having a chat, in the middle of the conversation, I can't remember how conditions or disabilities or whatever came about, but I just happened to mention I was epileptic. And literally, even though we'd been speaking perfectly fine for 5, 10 minutes, he suddenly, "Oh, okay. Do you need anything? You know, should we go grab a chair or something?" I was like, "No." I said, but again, without meaning to, they hear epilepsy and they're petrified because they don't understand the condition, which is something I didn't do until I became epileptic. And that's why, you know, with the great work you guys do and what we're trying to do today and generally is explain that epilepsy is a very, very misunderstood condition.
How did you sort of get into sort of career in football commentary?
Well, it's quite a long story. I mean, sadly, my mum passed away through cancer. She was only 38, I was 17. And when she was in hospital, she used to listen to a lot of hospital radio when we, because you only have certain visiting hours. And after quite a few years later, I happened to work with somebody who did hospital radio at Addenbrookes, where my mum was. And he said, "Do you want to go along?" He said, "You got a good face for radio." And and so we did. I really enjoyed it. And he then wrote off to a radio station called Boundary Sound, which is near Grantham. They liked the demo that we sent over. We did a Saturday morning breakfast show there. We did that for a while. I then almost just threw the sort of Hail Mary pass to BBC. I just wrote to them, "This is me. This is what I sound like. My hobbies are football, this, that, and the other." And, you know, I got stupidly lucky. I mean, it's your 1,000-to-1 shot. I don't for 1 minute put it down to my brilliance because it's not. It's just luck. They must have been just looking for somebody, and my CV went bang right at the right time. I got the phone call from a woman called Emma Joslin, who had the longest job title on earth. And she just said to me, she rang us up. She goes, "Oh, you know, this is Emma Joslin from the BBC, blah, 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 job title. And I'm looking for somebody to come in and read out the full-time scores live on BBC One next Saturday. Are you free?" So I thought, right, I'll just check the diary. Yep, I'm good. And so I went down, this is when BBC was at White City. And I went down there and I thought, this is a wind-up. I thought, one of my mates has found out I'm going to walk in looking an absolute fool. But I went to up to reception, very nervous, and said, "Hi, I'm Carl. I'm here to read out the full-time scores." And she looked on the big list. Da, 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 da. "Yeah, no problem. If you just grab a seat." Oh, God, this is real. Big pressure. So, deep breath. One of the runners came in, picked us up, went to the green room. They had all the live games on the screens, and they take me in. There's Gary Lineker sitting there, Alan Hansen, Peter Schmeichel, Les Ferdinand, all of these huge stars. And I walk in and they sort of say, "Oh, this is Carl." And they go, "Hello, hello, nice to meet you." And then we're sitting watching these live games. I'm just thinking, this is the strangest day I've ever had. And they started asking me questions about the game. They're like, "Oh, Carl, what do you think of so and so?" I'm like, Who cares? You were the Golden Boot of Mexico 86. You've won the Champions League. You've won God knows how many league titles. I once scored for my school team at Cambridge United, bro. You know, that's the level we're at. So, yeah, had that bizarre conversation. Then I was led to another room with a little TV screen, similar to the sort of laptop size. And Ray Stubbs at 6 o'clock passed it over to myself, and I read out the full-time scores on BBC One. Thankfully, didn't fluff it. I just went very simply into the role of I know how to read and I know how to talk. Do not think any more than that. Just do it. And yep, went really well. CV's gone up, obviously a few notches. Then wrote. Then my wife actually spotted an advert in The Guardian. Football commentators wanted, so sent my CV off again. Got lucky. First person didn't show up because they were going to have to get a replacement bus service. So they turned it down. I was second choice. Funnily enough, took the replacement bus. Went off to Underhill for Barnet Mansfield Town. Met Barry Swain, who I owe everything to. You know, he came to me and my wife's wedding, an absolute star that helped me build the career I've got. So I went along. I was just going to be the person sitting next to him, just. Every time the ball went out of play, just give us the latest scores from League Two. He said, but if you fancy having a go, press that button and you can do a little bit of co-commentary. So I thought, well, I'm never going to get this chance again. So press the button, off we went. And it went really well. He offered me the position at full time. It was only voluntary for a couple of years. I was just volunteer co-commentator covering Barnet in League Two, going to glamorous places like Morecambe and Fleetwood and Rochdale. And if there's anybody listening from those areas, I do apologise. I'm sure the place is lovely. It's just the football ground wasn't great. Accrington, Stanley, you know, who are they exactly and what have you? So, yeah, travelled the country doing that. Enjoyed it, even though, like I said, it was only League Two. It was still a great experience. And then Barry moved on to do some other commentary. And because BBC London knew I'd put in the hard yards, they knew I knew the format of the show, how to use the equipment, et cetera, et cetera. I just moved in as the main commentator. And then from there, I slowly worked my way up. Barnet sadly got relegated, and BBC London didn't want to lose us. So then I sort of became free range, as in they'd put me here, there, and everywhere covering Premier League games, just so they had somebody at the ground to give updates. Like if West Ham went to Everton, for example, or QPR went somewhere, I'd go along and watch. And got to meet the likes of Mourinho, Wenger. I met Kenny Dalglish once. That was bizarre. And so, yeah, did that. Obviously, again, your CV's going up a bit more. Then you get known from BBC Manchester, BBC Wales. And then I'm getting other bits and bobs in. And so I, yeah, was doing that, going along fine. And then Millwall had Dino Standen, who'd been at the club since time begun, finally decided to hang up the microphone. And Millwall were looking for somebody. They contacted BBC London. BBC London put me forwards. I had a chat with Millwall, and yeah, half an hour or so later, deal was done, and I've been there now 6 years, commentating on Millwall. Sort of, I look after the media teams on a match day, and yeah, they've been nothing but fantastic with me. They really are. Millwall are a very misunderstood club.
Do you feel you've sort of faced any sort of barriers or sort of limitations in your career because of your epilepsy?
Yeah, I would say getting around being really hard, having to rely a lot on other people, especially getting to games. I mean, I'd have to get my wife to give me a lift to the station. At the start, Barry, as I said, was brilliant. We would find the best train station for me to get to so that he could then pick me up en route. So, you know, if it wasn't for Barry, I wouldn't have been able to get to some games, which means I wouldn't have been able to commentate. So that then has an impact on my credentials, I suppose. You know, people might think, oh, actually, you know, he only gets to X, Y, and Z games. Maybe he's not right for the job. But because Barry would help me out getting to places and kept me involved, it kept me being a consistent part of the team. So I think that really helped. When I'd had seizures up like close to games, I might have to miss one or two or what have you. But it gave opportunities as well. Leon Legg, who plays or did play for Cambridge United as captain, he is very open talking about the condition, and we have been staunch advocates because we've seen problems for children with epilepsy coming through the rank. I won't name the football club, but there was a football club who had a brilliant young footballer who was playing 2 or 3 years above himself. He was captain. But when he was diagnosed with epilepsy, even though it didn't affect him at all, the club decided, oh, actually, yeah, we don't think you're right for the club. We're going to need to move on. Even though he was the best player by far, playing 2, 3 years above himself, suddenly they hear he's got epilepsy. I don't understand the condition. I know it's something to do with the brain. If he heads the ball, God knows what's going to happen. Sorry, mate, on your way. We managed to get him signed up with another club, so that wasn't as back in Victorian times as the other one. So, but Leon's great. We did a bit for TalkSport where we spoke about epilepsy, which was good, which they put out on air. So it helps us in that sense. Millwall have been fantastic. They've allowed me to promote epilepsy there with their team wearing epilepsy shirts on National Epilepsy Awareness Day. They've put up things on social media. They've allowed me to talk to the kids there about epilepsy, what it is. They've always been, I suppose, supportive in that sense. But I would say the main problems that I've come up against has been travel and stigma to an extent. But I suppose I'm lucky in the fact that I will talk to you enough about it to destigmatize it. I think if I just said I'm epileptic and left it there, or didn't want to talk about it, or got funny about it, or didn't really tell you what it was about, then, but because I openly admit that I've had seizures in the past, I've had partial seizures, I have to take medication. And for, if it makes any difference to anybody listening in, but epileptics, for example, I personally take 700 milligrams of sodium valproate and 50 milligrams of lamotrigine in the morning and in the evening. And yeah, because as I said, because I speak about it, it doesn't scare people, if that makes sense. And so that's really helped me, is being open. But in regards of transport has been a problem. And as I say, occasionally it's been a problem with people, but nothing, it hasn't held me back, because I've just thought, right, fine, I'll move sideways and carry on.
What kind of sort of support have you sort of received throughout your career? What do you feel sort of employers sort of need to do better to support people with epilepsy?
I think it should be, instead of skimmed over, when I've been on first aid courses, it can either not be mentioned or skimmed over very briefly. Yeah. When I think if we just spent a little bit more time talking about how common it is, for a start, I think there's over 600,000 people in the UK have the condition. I think it's, I think it works out something like 1 in every 130, 140, something along those lines. And if there's something that common, that it should be common knowledge, it shouldn't be held against people, it shouldn't be a lack of knowledge that holds people back. So I think in first aid courses that should be there more, and make it more prevalent, make it more up to date, I suppose, instead of people thinking, oh, epilepsy, well, that means seizures, that means they can't drive, that means they're going to have problems, that means they're going to have seizures, they're going to have times off work, they're going to have this, they're going to have that, and naturally coming up with problems that aren't there. So I think that's one of the issues. What was the other part of that question? Sorry, can you read that again?
What sort of support have you received from your career? Yeah. Sort of helped you?
Yeah, I'd say the support from family. My wife's been superb, not just help with my career, but from an emotional point of view, to pick me up every time I've had a seizure, not in the literal sense, although that is true, but in the sense of emotionally, because it's such a huge setback and so heartbreaking to know that, as I mentioned about an alcoholic, if you have a drink, then you're back to square one. And so if I've had a seizure, she knows that the problems that maybe they're going to have to increase my medication, maybe they're going to have to consider taking my license away for longer than just a year, maybe you're going to have to consider this, that, the other. And it's then worrying that your life will change, but not in a good way. You know, I've worked really hard to get where I am now. I don't want a condition that I can't control to stop me, but it's there, it could. You know, if I, heaven forbid, have a seizure, at the moment I can drive because I haven't had a seizure in the last year. But if I was driving to a game and unfortunately, heaven forbid, I had a crash or something, or a bad accident at home, fell down the stairs or something like that, and that's nothing I could, there's nothing I can do about it. It's not, for example, if you break your arm, you can rest up, you do what the doctor says, your arm's okay. With epilepsy, you just don't know. You do all the things that you can do, holding the handrail when you go up and down stairs. I don't do the barbecue at home because you wouldn't want a quarter pounder with baits on it. So my wife will do that. I'll just go around with the drinks. And for holding me, I'd say support of my wife's been massive, and friends as well, close friends. My auntie and uncle, have been fantastic. Again, don't mention it. You mentioned the condition, and after that, apart from if I've had a seizure, it doesn't even enter the conversation. Apart from a well done, if I've gone and done a talk somewhere, my wife always says she's very proud of me for being this open about it and talking, knowing how hard it is to talk about the fact that you're an epileptic, but knowing that it's worthwhile doing, because if it helps one person to think, actually, this lad had epilepsy, but he now is a football commentator, which is a job I love. If that inspires anybody or makes people realize that epilepsy doesn't have to hold you back from doing something that you do for free, then it's worth doing. It's worth admitting that, yes, I have seizures, but it won't stop me achieving what I want to do. Simple as that. If I have a seizure, so be it. I'll bounce back.
What would you say to someone who's been sort of recently diagnosed with epilepsy?
It's a tough one because everybody's so different, and how it affects them depends what type of seizure it is, whether they're having partial seizures, depends on their age. I mean, I've had people before that have come up to me after talks and have said to me on the quiet. I remember one girl, she was in her early 20s, she'd recently been diagnosed with epilepsy, and she didn't want to tell her other half because she was scared that he'd break up with her, even though it was starting to get quite serious. And she said, "Oh, what should I do?" I said, "Well, I can't answer that for you. The only thing I can say," because she was quite, well, stressed, and I can understand why. I said, "The only thing I can say is that, and I'm not telling you if you should or shouldn't tell him, but if you feel that if you tell him he'll leave, is he the right person for you anyway?" And you never know with things. If you tell somebody, it's best to know than always be worried and get more stressed, and it affects your relationship that way. So it's hard, because not everybody wants to open up about epilepsy, especially to family. It does, just because somebody's your family or your friend or even your other half, it doesn't mean they'll accept you because you're epileptic. People might naturally be scared or think, "I don't want to be a part of this person's life," because of the hassle that it's going to cause if they have a seizure. "I don't want to be associated with somebody that has seizures. Why would I?" And people can go that way. So the advice I can give would be to start off with, for yourself, get used to being epileptic. Once you've accepted the condition, right, this is me, then think about who to tell. Almost, I suppose, one step at a time. If you were walking through a forest and you were completely lost and you think, "How on earth am I going to get out of here?" But do you know the first step? Do you know, well, yes, so take that one. Right, where's the next step? Take that one. Don't think, "Oh my God, how am I going to cope with everything?" Just one step at a time. So, right, I have epilepsy. Am I okay to move forward? Have I understood the condition? Do I feel confident enough to tell somebody? Yes. Who's the right person I should tell? Tell them, have the discussion with them, and slowly, but just small steps. Really, but I'd say the most important thing is to accept it yourself, the condition, and then tell others, because you'll feel stronger for it, because you're okay with it, or you've learned to live with it.
That's all we have time for today. A big thank you to Carl for joining me. Thank you to everyone for listening. Keep an eye on our social media channels for the next Talk Epilepsy podcast, and go to our website at epilepsyscotland.org.uk for more info on epilepsy. Have a great day.